National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
If all of the economic activity by people of faith is added up, believers contribute more than $1 trillion to the American economy every year. That is a finding of a new report just out on the economic contributions of religious communities. It's a powerful statement on the importance, relevance, and positive role of faith today. This week on Register Radio, we talked to Joan Desmond, Register Senior Editor, about that report. And then we're going to discuss the tragic legacy of the Georgetown slaves with Register correspondent Peter Jesserer Smith. Hello, and welcome again to Register Radio. I'm Matthew Bunsen, a senior editor for the National Catholic Register and a senior contributor for EWTN. Thanks so much for joining me. As all of our regular listeners have probably noticed, the Register's editor-in-chief and my co-host for Register Radio is not here today. That's because Jeanette and her family are very busy welcoming their latest edition. Jeanette DeMello will be away for a few weeks on maternity leave, but she asked me to thank everyone for your prayers and best wishes. She'll be back soon, and please be assured that Mom and baby are doing just fine. Meantime, the Interdisciplinary Journal of Research on Religion found that religious communities contribute $1.2 trillion each year to the American economy. That is more than the annual revenues of the top 10 tech companies, including Apple, Amazon, and Google combined. These are amazing stats, but what does all of this really mean? To help us understand more about this story, which is featured in our editorial for this issue, I'm joined by Joan Frawley Desmond, a Register senior editor. Joan, of course, is an award-winning journalist widely published in Catholic, ecumenical, and secular media. Hello, Joan, and welcome back to Register Radio.
Oh, happy to be here, Matthew.
That figure of $1.2 trillion just sort of looms out, doesn't it? Viewed in terms of the gross domestic product, as we were documenting, religion in the U.S. would be ranked as the 15th largest national economy in the world. But this report on the economic benefits of religion in America is worth talking about as it comes at a critical moment. What are some of the fundamentals that are talked about in this report?
Well, it's really interesting. I think, you know, religion's gotten so much bad press right now, whether you're dealing with culture wars and, you know, abortion and issues like that, or even regarding, you know, the something in the darker realm of terrorism. The reality is that religion, all kinds of religions in the United States, have contributed a huge amount to the economy and, more importantly, to helping individuals one-on-one as well as big institutions. We have schools, we have massive hospital networks. Catholic hospitals are now responsible for something like 1 out of 6 of all visits. We have charities, and Matthew, we're talking about charities at all levels, from your Catholic charity in your diocese to local parish-based soup kitchens, or even other kinds of church-based visitation, parish visitation programs. So it's a range of things, big and small, and the sum total is it's having a huge impact on the economy, but more importantly on people's individual lives.
Yeah, what does it say, though, about the value of religion to American life?
Well, I think one of the most interesting aspects of this is I've been following the ongoing debate started by the ACLU and some of its allies in the so-called reproductive rights field. They've been attacking Catholic hospitals, and Catholic hospitals have continued to grow. A lot of the Catholic networks are very solid. They're doing well. And so as you have changes in healthcare, Catholic hospitals are hanging in there and providing wonderful services. Well, the ACLU doesn't deny that they have some good services, but they try to argue, gee, if only you'd be less Catholic and provide abortions or tubal ligations, you would be doing much better service. And Sister Carol Keehan, the head of the Catholic Health Association, the lobby for hospitals, has pointed out that it's precisely that holistic vision. It's a vision that cares for and respects the mother and the unborn child and would never pit one against the other. And that same vision is applied to the poor. There's a huge amount of health care provided free of charge to those who cannot pay for whatever reason. So these are some of the contributions that Catholic health care is providing, but also inner-city Catholic schools that are the graduation rates for inner-city kids who face many of the same problems, for example, that are faced by other kids in public schools and other kinds of schools, and yet the graduation rates are better. Why is that? Well, these schools provide a kind of oasis for these kids who might have a very unstable life outside the school. And that very oasis, which is a holistic vision of life, you know, with virtues and respect for all and the dignity of the human person, that is being transmitted to the children, and hopefully in the same way with someone going into Catholic hospital. It's being transmitted to the mother and with the care of a child who might be disabled and is born in a hospital.
Yeah, well, exactly. Economic contributions are wonderful, but doesn't this report also point to the deeper contributions of faith, especially, of course, the church to society? I know that you and I talked, and we were looking at this editorial, about Catholic social teachings and the way that the principles of that, of solidarity and subsidiarity, all apply here. It's one thing to put dollars and cents on this, but it's another thing to look at the person-to-person and the transformations that happen in lives.
I think really, Matthew, at this point in time, more and more we need people who aren't just counting heads or counting beads and really see the person in front of them, you know, the sanctity of human life, the dignity of the human person. Any institution that can bring that front and center and remind its staff, its doctors, its nurses, its teachers, its administrators, that each person really counts and each person has dignity and equality in the eyes of God. I think that's just priceless, and I think it's a reason why these institutions still exist. I mean, I've covered all kinds of, you know, you'll look at an American saint, it'll turn out that she started a hospital 200 years ago. The hospital's still going. Mm-hmm. Why is it still going? Because it's providing a unique contribution to the patients, and even to, you could argue, the nurses and doctors who want to be in an environment where their own ideals are recognized.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you're listening to Register Radio here on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. I'm Matthew Bunsen, host of Register Radio, and I'm talking with Joan Frawley Desmond, senior editor with the National Catholic Register, about the economics of religion. Well, Joan, we're talking about Catholic social teachings in practice and the value of religion to society. What's the response, though, to those who say, for example, Google, because of its taxes, is actually contributing more, or these large corporations or the wealthy contributing more than religion does because of the tax-exempt status?
Yeah, I am not an expert on that topic, but what I would say is that a lot of the reason why there is tax, you know, there are many reasons for that tax benefit, but remember this, that these institutions are leveraging a huge amount of volunteer time and dollars to help with services that are benefiting the entire society. And so that's why that's available. There are discussions about changing that, and on all sides you have people that want these institutions to be doing other things, even political advocacy, in a way that wouldn't be appropriate at this point. But I don't know if it will change. I think it's sad, but our society, you know, on a related topic, I was looking at the increase in so-called nuns, people who have no religion. And I think we probably are going to see more people who are going to become skeptical of religion. The only thing they know about religion might be the headlines they see having to do with some culture wars drama or you know, some other kind of, you know, violence in the name of religion. They have a negative view, and so when they're asked, you know, should they have tax benefits, they're going to say, you know what, I don't even understand why they have it in the first place. Mm-hmm. So I think we have to keep putting the message out there, and this report helps explain the incalculable value of these institutions. At the same time, I think the report also helps us understand the importance the administrators of these institutions, principals, hospital healthcare network executives. We have to keep them Catholic if we're going to keep providing the special contributions that they provide.
Yeah, and it always does come down to the dignity of the human person, doesn't it, when we're talking about certainly the church's contributions to society?
I think a key point, getting back to your question earlier, which I didn't entirely answer, and that is some of these fundamental Catholic social principles. For example, the principle of subsidiarity, working at the grassroots level so that you can really encourage face-to-face interaction with person providing the service and the person needing the service. It's that kind of interaction which we should all be modeling to whatever degree we can, which helps promote change in the life of people that need change. Mm-hmm. You know, the AA program in the church basement that's helping people overcome alcohol addiction. The pastor who can take someone aside and counsel them on a divorce. You know, that family gets divorced, that family's financial future is in jeopardy.
Yeah, well, very briefly in the time we have left, talking about the dignity of the human person, you also reported in this issue on Donald Trump's outreach to pro-life voters. Briefly, tell us about what you found.
Well, it's really interesting, Matthew. It'll be interesting to see how this all plays out. This week, Marjorie Dannenfelter, who is the president of the Susan B. Anthony List, that's a pro-life group that raises funds for pro-life political candidates all over the country. It's viewed as having a very strong ground game in elections, and it's helped elect over 100 people in Congress and also, I think, around 20 people in the Senate. Marjorie has announced that with the support of the Trump campaign, she will lead a Trump pro-life coalition. And this coalition will help activate the pro-life community's support for Trump at all levels, from national down to the state level.
Amazing, especially when we consider that the pro-life cause up to this point in the election really hadn't been much discussed.
No, I think pro-lifers were very disappointed. Granted, they knew that Trump had come relatively late to the pro-life cause. I think it was around 2012 he said he had started to change his mind based on a personal experience, but we really hadn't heard much from Trump. Then he's at the acceptance, he gets an acceptance speech at the Cleveland-based Republican National Convention and never mentions pro-life at all. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, he did select Mike Pence, Governor Mike Pence of Indiana, as his running mate, very strong pro-life, and then he also said he was going to nominate pro-life jurists for the Supreme Court. That got the pro-life community's attention. Since then, there's been ongoing negotiations, and he's offered further support. He wants to pass the Pain Capable Act, and he's also said he's going to defend the Hyde Amendment. But Matthew, you may have noted in this election season, Hillary Clinton and other Democrats have called for, overturning the Hyde Amendment. The Hyde Amendment has protected Americans who oppose abortion from using their hard-earned tax dollars to subsidize abortion. And thus far, that's been a bipartisan issue. There hasn't been much to challenge it. All of a sudden, we're seeing major challenge on that from Hillary Clinton. So Trump saying he's going to help with that, well, that's also gotten people's notice. I think, though, there are many skeptics, and in the process of reporting my story, there were people that said they didn't want to comment. Mm-hmm. There are others that say that the pro-life community is accepting Trump's pledges too much on face value, and they should get more for that.
Yeah. Well, I know there's going to be a lot more to talk about over the concluding weeks of this campaign, but Joan, thanks so much for the update, and thanks for all of your work on both of these important issues.
Always a pleasure, Matthew.
Well, coming up, I'm going to talk with Peter Jesser Smith about the legacy of the Georgetown slaves. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. More when we return.
Bishop Robert Barron talks about the importance of the National Catholic Register.
You know, the Register delivers something which is extremely important because you won't get it from the mainstream media, namely the Catholic context and perspective. Sometimes the mainstream media will pretend, oh, they don't have a perspective. They're just giving the news neutrally. Well, no one does that. Everyone's got a perspective. What they often bring is a sort of secularist ideology. The National Catholic Register brings a robustly Catholic take on the world and that's indispensably important.
For a free 6-issue trial of the National Catholic Register, go to ncregister.com and click on the 6 free issue banner, or call 800-421-3230 for your 6 free issues. And as you await your first issue, enjoy our online content.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back to Register Radio. I'm Matthew Bunsen, senior editor for the National Catholic Register and senior contributor for EWTN. On September 1st, Georgetown University released a 100-page report that documented Georgetown's dependence on slavery to build the university's iconic campus, as well as an infamous sale of Catholic African Americans by the Jesuits to keep the school financially afloat. To discuss his reporting on this very dark moment, I'm joined by Peter Jesser Smith, Register staff reporter. Peter helped cover Pope Francis's historic visit to Jerusalem and the Holy Land in 2014 and covered the Syrian and Iraqi refugee crisis by traveling to Jordan and Lebanon. He has been doing some splendid work on race relations and other social issues for the Register. Peter, welcome back to Register Radio.
Thank you, Matthew. It's always a pleasure.
Well, you've written an article on a topic that touches on history, on justice, and a very painful legacy in America's past, but it also seems to resonate with so many of the things that we're looking at today. What first drew you to this story?
Well, for a while in my work at the Register, I've been very drawn to actually learn more about race relations in the United States, but particularly I thought that we really hadn't heard enough of the perspective of African American Catholics in our discussion, and so I wanted to help our Catholic audience learn more about the African American perspective on race in America in 2016, and at the same time, one of the things I kept discovering was this enormously rich and deep legacy of faith that African American Catholics have, and I thought that their perspective and their insights were very much much needed as part of our discussion, and my work has provided an opportunity to be able to put their voices in dialogue with the broader picture.
Mm-hmm. Well, it comes as a surprise to many readers that there were slaves at all at Georgetown. What was the background to all of this?
Well, it's very, very interesting because, and it's, in many ways, it's a kind of a sad contradiction because the Jesuits in many different areas were, have been pioneers for indigenous rights and even worked a lot to advocate against some of the terrible things that had happened with slavery. But in Maryland, and this was nowhere perfect all over, but in Maryland, the Jesuits had gotten involved with slavery as the pool of quote-unquote indentured servants ran out. And I think by that we can mean a term of bonded slavery for certain people who were either criminals or political enemies of the British Crown, but they had moved on to they had kind of become enmeshed with the local culture of slavery in Maryland and got involved in plantation slavery. Now, what the interesting thing that happens is around the time of this very infamous sale. Sort of the kind of the compromise that the Jesuits had made with the system. Well, you know, there is slavery, but we'll keep the families together, and we'll give them the faith, and so we'll educate them in the faith, and that's what we'll do as responsible people. At least that's kind of what their theory was, I think, up until 1838.
Mm-hmm.
Go
ahead, please.
Oh, now what happens, and what makes this such an act of betrayal, is that the Jesuits the Jesuits, in order to fund Georgetown University, had made a bad land deal, and the land prices collapsed. And so Georgetown was going to be lost. And so what they did, and this is just human, this is a sad story of human nature that we've seen many times in the church. They said, well, what we'll do is we'll get rid of our quote-unquote slavery problem by selling, and save Georgetown, by selling these African-American slaves whom we have baptized and educated and have looked up to us as their spiritual fathers. And that's really where the betrayal comes in, because the provincials lied to their superiors in Rome about the nature of the deal, broke up families, sold them for $115,000, and there was enormous amount of scandal caused in the Jesuit order by this, as well as a horror on the part of the black Catholics themselves, who had all of a sudden found themselves sold for whatever reason they didn't know.
Yeah. Well, you're listening to Register Radio here on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. I'm Matthew Bunsen, and I'm talking with Peter Jesser Smith about the tragic story of the Georgetown slaves. So what exactly prompted Georgetown's decision to reopen what is obviously a rather difficult and frankly embarrassing episode in the history of the school?
Well, I have to admire Georgetown because one of the things I think that in part, there was a confluence of events. A number of students had kind of brought up the fact that, there was this sort of of past experience with race, and the existence of this slave sale had been known. But what they didn't know was that the descendants of these of the slaves were still alive. Anyway, they decided last year to finally make a clean breast of it and really explore what had happened, because the insight was that our university and the good that it's done has been built upon a very evil act that was done to our fellow Catholics more than 175 years ago. And we live with the consequences today, and we have to do something about it, because this nation, above all, needs racial healing and racial reconciliation. And, I mean, while we've said it's a tragic story, in many ways it's a very profound story of faith that's bigger than Georgetown.
Mm-hmm. No, that's precisely the true, and we can even ask the question, what about the descendants of the slaves? What do they think about all of this?
Well, the great thing about this story is that it's very much like a story of Joseph and his brothers. You have Joseph sold by his brothers for 20 pieces of silver, and is basically considered dead, but it's Joseph's faith and forgiveness that ends up years later saving not only his brothers, but countless others. And in many ways, the reason that we know about the descendants is because the black Catholic slaves who were betrayed by the Jesuit priests, who gave them the faith, kept it for themselves. And they realized that their faith was bigger than the priests who had betrayed them. And because they kept it, we know through baptismal records who a lot of the descendants are. And the descendants have been kind of reacquainting themselves with this history, but what they've really wanted to do is to take the legacy of their ancestors and of this moment and work with Georgetown to extend the benefits to countless others, to take this legacy and work with Georgetown to heal the racial divisions and the racial inequities of this country, so that there can actually be real healing and real moving forward. And so they want to create a billion-dollar foundation with Georgetown to comprehensively try to address these issues.
Mm-hmm. In the short time that we have left, tie this with so many of the issues that we're facing today, and I know a lot of the things that you've been writing about for the Register lately. Is this a kind of recipe for how we can go forward in bringing unity in the country?
I think... I mean, to tie it in with what we're seeing with a lot of the racial tension and the violence and things that we're seeing in Charlotte, our church has, I think what our church really needs to do at this moment to actually really bring about healing is to channel the faith of African-American Catholics and really highlight the African-American saints that we do have in this church who have not been canonized yet, but whose stories of rising above the challenges and racial discrimination and their examples of forgiveness are very powerful ones, because what we need now is the healing that comes through reconciliation and recognizing that there is no black community or Hispanic community or white community. I can't think of different people in that way. I have to think of them all as members of my community.
Yeah.
And if we realize that their sufferings are our sufferings and that their problems are our problems too, we can then work together to solve them in a way that lifts up everyone.
Well, thanks so much, Peter. I think that's a great way to end this. Thanks for your work, too. Well, thank you for joining us here on Register Radio here on EWTN. Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. For everyone at the National Catholic Register and my producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Matthew Bunsen. Until next week, take care and God bless.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.